This is Avery After Dark, and I'm your host, Avery Ross. I came across one of the scariest stories on the internet, my missing son, and it creeped us all out. So after an overwhelming demand for more, the story continues. And trust me, it's about to get even more bizarre. This is My Missing Son, Part 2. Previously in Part 1, a woman took to the internet to share her horrifying experience. One day, she received a shocking call from the police announcing they found her missing son, Logan. But she insists she never had a son. Even stranger, her husband, Dylan, and the authorities confirm his identity, saying he disappeared mysteriously 3 years before. Upon laying eyes on the boy, the woman feels he is pure evil. She has no idea who this child is, but it's not her son. And after bringing him home, the boy's eerie, unsettling behavior leaves her questioning her own sanity and her safety. Now let's continue with the story from her point of view. They have just brought the boy back home, and things are about to go from bad to worse. I wandered into the living room and sank onto the couch, dropping my head in my hands. There was a stranger in our house. A dark-eyed stranger who my husband insisted was my son. What was I going to do? A tear slipped from my eyes as I listened to the sounds of Dylan puttering around in the kitchen. I glanced down the hallway at the closed guest bedroom door, remembering that wide smile and those big, soul-staringly dark eyes. When Dylan had finally concocted something suitable for everyone, he brought the pot out onto the table along with a stack of dishes. "Logan, dinner's ready," he called. I watched with dread as the guest bedroom door swung open. The boy stood silhouetted in the doorway, still silent, watching. I was frozen in place, waiting to see what he would do. Then it was like he snapped out of a trance, and he came down the hallway into the dining room. "There you are," Dylan said happily. "Take a seat. I made pasta." He climbed into a chair and sat with his hands folded in front of him. Dylan turned to me. "Will you be joining us?" I nodded and rose from the couch, passing a bookshelf as I went. My heart stuttered and skipped in my chest. On the middle shelf, among the photos of Dylan and I, there were some pictures I'd never seen before. A grainy photo of me in a hospital bed, holding a bundle of what I can only assume was a baby. A child with a mop of dark hair, wearing only a diaper, running through a sprinkler. That same dark-haired child sprawled across the floor with a young Gus licking his face. Dylan and I wearing fall-themed outfits in a field with the boy, though much younger, standing between us holding a pumpkin. What the heck? I slid into a chair, not taking my eyes off the boy. Dylan served up the pasta, plain with tomato sauce, and I poked at it, watching as the boy ignored the fork next to him and started jamming the noodles into his mouth with both fists. I opened my mouth to say something, a sick feeling bubbling up in my stomach. But Dylan shook his head firmly. He was really going to sit here and act like this was normal behavior. He'd probably have some sort of excuse for it, like maybe the boy had been raised by wolves for the last 3 years. I turned away, my food untouched. Gus hadn't come out since we got home. Dinner time, he was usually planted in the doorway, watching us eat, waiting for the opportunity to snatch up a dropped crumb or stray noodle. "Gus," I called. Dylan waved his hand. "Leave him be." It wasn't right. "Gus?" Dylan slammed both fists onto the table. "I said leave him be, Liz." I jumped, my eyes darting to the boy's face. There was a twinkle in his eyes I hadn't seen before. A slight smirk pulled up on the corners of his mouth. "I'm just worried about him," I said quietly. "Sure, you're worried about him," he said, waving a hand in the direction of the boy, whose face was now covered in a layer of orange-red tomato sauce. "But this..." "I don't like Gus," the boy said flatly, reaching for more pasta. A chill snaked around my spine. In the living room, the house phone rang shrilly, startling all of us. I jumped up from the table, eyeing the bookcase with its alien pictures of memories I didn't have. I was losing it, right? No, Dylan was losing it. Maybe he'd been harboring this desire to be a father all these years. to the point where it had become some sort of repressed psychosis. And then the detective called and told them they had our son, and he finally snapped, believing it to be the truth, bringing it all up to the surface. His outbursts weren't like him. The anger and frustration, the way he looked at me. It wasn't him. It wasn't my Dylan. I snatched the phone from the base. Hello? Alyssa, it's Mom. Hi, Mom. Is it true, honey? She asked. I scrunched up my face. Is what true? That they found him. They found Logan? She asked. When I say I didn't sleep that first night, I'm not exaggerating. I turned in early, just to get away from the both of them, and listened through the wall as Dylan tucked the boy in. I had found Gus cowering underneath our bed, and he lay next to me, wide-eyed and alert. When Dylan finally came in, he climbed into bed without saying a word and rolled over so his back was facing me. It was like a slap in the face. No matter what happened, communication breakdown, minor argument, major fight, it didn't matter. We talked before bed every night and fell asleep holding hands. Not that night. I didn't understand his anger, but maybe I wasn't looking at it from his perspective. If we did have a child at some point and he'd gone missing, wouldn't I be angry at Dylan if the child returned and he was acting like he wasn't happy about it? Like he had had no recollection of ever having a child. Wouldn't I feel frustrated and confused? Talking to my mom had made things so much worse. Now, I could no longer blame Dylan's confusion solely on him. My own mother asked about the boy, talked about his return, excitedly. She even asked when she could come see him. It was more and more looking like I was losing my mind, that I'd scrubbed out all the evidence of the boy because I couldn't handle it when he disappeared. How else do you explain the pictures in the living room? Deep down in the pit of my stomach, another thought poked at me. Maybe neither of us was losing our minds. The boy's dark, soulless eyes and wide grin plagued me as I lay in bed. The hours ticked by, Gus by my side, as I thought about the possibility that my initial reaction to seeing the boy was the only explanation. He was evil, and he'd come here to destroy us. At some point, I drifted off. I woke with a start, feeling a deep vibrating against my side. It took a minute to realize that it was Gus, crouched down low next to me, growling at the door. I struggled to sit up, peering through the dark as my eyes adjusted. Dylan had left the door open, I assumed in case the boy needed us, and dark shadows pulsed beyond the doorframe. Hello? I whispered. Is someone there? Dylan snored quietly beside me, completely oblivious to my insomnia and the agitated dog. I squinted, then nearly screamed. A dark silhouette stood in the doorway, dark glittering orbs unblinking, staring at me. What do you need? I asked, my voice high-pitched. The boy didn't answer. Gus let out another growl that rumbled deep in his chest. The orbs flickered from my face to Gus. A hissing sound cut through the silence, and Gus let out a little yelp, burying himself beneath the blankets. The boy's eyes swung back to my face. I was pinned in place by the stare. Waves of malintent washed over me, shaking me to my very core. What did this boy want from us? Why was he here? Why us? We were locked in a staring match for more than 10 minutes. Then I blinked, and he was gone. Like he was never there in the first place. I was tempted to get out of bed and check to see if he was in his bed, sleeping. But to heck with that. Gus's reaction was enough to tell me that I hadn't imagined it. I knew one thing. I was not going to live like this. In the morning, I'd take Gus, pack a bag, and get out of here. But what about Dylan? I couldn't leave him behind. He was wrapped up in this delusion, but it wasn't his fault. He needed my help to see that this boy wasn't our child. If I left him alone with the boy, there was no telling what would happen to him. I couldn't just abandon my husband, my best friend, even if he wasn't himself at that moment. He needed me. I needed to figure out what was going on. When the watery gray light of dawn filtered around the edges of the curtains, I pulled myself out of bed. The house was silent, save for the quiet snoring coming from Dylan's side of the bed. I felt his hug on my nightshirt as I slid my feet into my slippers. Gus had clamped his teeth down on the corner of my shirt and was trying to keep me there. "It's okay, buddy," I whispered, patting his head. "Release. Release, bud, it's okay." He finally opened his mouth and let go of my shirt, but looked up at me with big, round, pleading eyes. He was trembling, and I felt awful leaving him, but I had work to do. He followed me out into the kitchen. He let out a whine and glanced at the front door. "You want to go out?" He hadn't come out at all last night, so I was sure his bladder was close to bursting. I grabbed his leash, slipped on my Crocs, and opened the door. Before I could hook the leash onto his collar, Gus jumped up and slammed his paws into the screen door, pushing down on the handle. The door flew open and Gus took off running before I could react. By the time I made it out onto the front steps, he was nowhere in sight. "Gus," I screamed, holding his leash helplessly in my hand. But he was gone. He was probably safer on the streets than here. I didn't like the way the boy looked at him. Besides, I couldn't hold it against him, could I? How many times had I thought about doing the exact same thing over the last 24 hours? I hoped he'd be all right. The thought of him being out there alone made tears well up in my eyes. Of course I'd go look for him, but I didn't expect to find him. Not while the boy was still around. "Hey, what's all the screaming?" I turned to see Dylan standing in the doorway, rubbing his eyes. "Gus," I said. "He ran away." "What? Why didn't you catch him?" he asked, accusation in his voice. He was too fast," I said, closing the door. "He was gone by the time I got out there." Dylan shrugged. "I'm sure he'll come back. Is Logan up yet?" "I have no idea," I said, moving back into the kitchen to put some coffee on. "So you're going to continue with this charade," he said. I whipped around. "What charade?" "This game you're playing where you're pretending you don't remember our son," he said. "It's not a game, it's the truth," I snapped. I was tired of pretending. I was tired of the accusations and the guilt trips. I probably shouldn't have said it, but I was so tired. "If that's the truth, Liz, we might need to go talk to someone," Dylan said quietly. Dylan said, "I have to go into work today, by the way." A shock of fear jolted through me. "It's Saturday. I left work early yesterday, remember?" Dylan asked. "I have some things to wrap up." I did not want to be left alone with that thing, but it would give me some time to try and figure out what was going on. Some of you have suggested in the comments that I look up various types of supernatural or sinister beings, and that's exactly what I had already planned on doing. I was no idiot. I've watched all the horror movies and read all the books. Asking for permission to come in, those dark, creepy eyes, the monotone voice. Something was off with that kid. I just didn't know what. And what kind of being could inject memories of itself into people anyway? Maybe the better question was, why didn't he inject them into me too? Why leave me out of the loop to spiral, when he could have come home to two parents with memories of him, who were happy to have him home? Once Dylan left, the boy wandered out of the guest bedroom, still wearing the clothes we picked him up in. He stared at me sitting at the dining room table, unblinking. "Are you hungry?" I finally asked. "Where's Gus?" the boy asked. "Gone," I said, glancing at the door. "Where's Dad?" "He had to go to work for a bit," I said. "Are you hungry?" There was a slick of red on the side of the boy's mouth. He reached up with a pale hand and wiped it away. "I already ate." I frowned, knowing fully well he hadn't, but I didn't want to even think about what it was he thought he'd eaten. "Can you change out of those clothes? We need to go to the library," I said. "Why?" the boy asked. "Because I need some books," I said, losing my patience. "I don't want to," he said. I stood from the table and marched into the guest bedroom. The social worker at the police station had given us some spare clothing and the boy's size, since we obviously didn't have anything at home. I rummaged around in the bag, then pulled out a fresh pair of jeans and a red polo shirt. I waved them at the boy. "Put these on." "I said I don't want to go," he said. I sighed. "I can't leave you here alone." The boy recoiled, hissing at me from between his teeth. "No." "Look," I said, changing tactics. "If you go with me to the library, I'll take you to the store after and buy you anything you want." The boy tilted his head. Anything? I swallowed. Yes, anything. Just get dressed, please. At the library, I sent the boy over to the children's area where story time was going on. I watched as he sat on the floor cross-legged, on the outskirts of the circle of the other children. Then I hurried to the section of the library where I could find books on folklore, cryptids. I pulled book after book off the shelves and thumbed through them. Nothing about the boy's appearance in our lives seemed to match up with the creatures I was finding in the books. A changeling was close, but that was a replacement for a child that was taken by a fairy or a troll or something. This child wasn't a replacement. He never existed in the first place. What was he? Frustration coiled inside my stomach. When story time ended, a line of parents and children shuffled out of the library. I glanced over at the children's section and saw there were a few stragglers, parents and kids looking around at books or playing with toys. The boy sat still on the carpet, hands planted on his knees, staring straight ahead. I needed to find something, anything, before he got restless, and before Dylan realized we'd left the house. I opened up a book on urban legends and was thumbing through it, when a shrill scream cut through the air. There was a commotion over in the children's area. Shoot, I said, throwing the book aside. I jumped up from my chair and rushed across the room, rounding the corner. There was a group of parents, all clearly upset, standing between the boy and a girl in a pink dress. Whose kid is this? Someone asked, looking around. Hi, mine. Sorry, what happened? I asked breathlessly. A woman pointed to the little girl, who had lines of tears streaming down her cheeks and red marks on her neck. Your son was choking my daughter. My mouth dropped open. I grabbed the boy roughly by the shoulder. Why did you do that? He looked up at me. I was reading a book and she took it from me. No emotion whatsoever. No remorse in his flat-toned voice. I looked at the little girl, horrified, then at her parents. I'm so sorry. You should watch your kid, the mother snapped. Or better yet, don't take him out in public until he learns how to behave. Yes, of course, I said, taking hold of the boy's hand. Just touching him made my skin prickle, but I was trying to keep up appearances. Let's go. As I dragged him away, he started laughing, a raspy, gurgly sound that made all the hairs on my arm stand on end. I looked over my shoulder. The other parents watched us go, their eyes wide, hands pressed to their mouths. The boy continued laughing all the way out to the car. I shook him. Stop that. What's wrong with you? She deserved it, he answered, climbing into the back seat. I tore out of the parking lot, and 5 minutes later, I turned onto our street. I could feel the boy's eyes boring into the back of my head. You said you'd take me to the store, he said, and even though his tone didn't change, I could hear the malice behind it. I pulled into the driveway, cut the engine, and whipped around to face him. That was before you choked the girl at the library. I climbed out of the car, glancing around for any sign of Gus. Our next-door neighbor was walking around her front yard, shaking a box of treats. She waved at me absent-mindedly as the boy joined me on the front walk, still bristling from being told no. Alyssa, dear, the neighbor called. You haven't seen my cat Muffin around, have you? No, is she missing? I asked, glancing at the boy. I let her out early this morning and she always comes home for lunch, she said, scratching her head. I don't know where she could be. I'll keep an eye out for her, I said, cold cascading down my back. It was not unusual to see the gray tiger-striped cat wandering around our backyard. The guest bedroom looked out over the very same backyard. I looked down at the boy, and he grinned. I know people might be getting impatient to know what happened. I thought about skipping to the present, but there's so much that happened in the next couple days. I'd be doing you a disservice not to explain it all. The story needs to get out there. It needs to be told. So this doesn't happen to you or the people you love. So your life isn't destroyed like mine was. I woke up the next morning with a renewed sense of purpose. I was going to figure out who or what this kid was and why he had inserted himself into our lives. It was Sunday, and Dylan would be home all day, so I could leave the boy and tell them I was going to look for Gus without arousing suspicion. Our town was small, but quirky. The business district had a maze of different shops lining the streets, where you could find artisan soap right next to an ammo shop, right next to a bakery. After breakfast, I hopped into the car and sped toward a specific store, one where I thought I could maybe find some help. It was pretty unassuming from the outside, a tall Victorian-style door. Above it, there was a sign, Dedwick's Emporium. I'd only been in there once before. It wasn't really my thing. Full of tarot card decks, crystals, herbs for potion making, and other ethereal items. It was dark inside as I swung open the door. The walls and the ceiling were painted black, with sparkling strings of golden lights nestled between tree branches that stretched above me. A woman with a gentle smile greeted me. "Can I help you find something?" she asked. I swallowed, hoping what I was about to say didn't warrant a call to the police. "Do you believe in demons?" I asked. The woman glanced at her coworker at the back of the store, then back at me. "I believe there are things out there that mean to do us harm." She paused. "Are you okay?" Tears sprung to my eyes. I shook my head. "No, I need help. This was the only place I could think to come," I said. The woman stepped from behind the counter and motioned for me to follow her. She murmured something to her coworker, who moved to the front of the store, then led me through a door at the back of the store. The small room we stepped into was surprisingly bright compared to the rest of the place. There was a pair of red velvet armchairs, a coffee station, and a table. "My name is Autumn," the woman said, motioning to one of the chairs. "I'm Alyssa," I said, sinking into it. "Can I get you some coffee or tea?" I nodded miserably. "Yes, please. Tea would be nice." Autumn set about heating water and pouring it into two mugs. She plopped a tea bag into each of them, set one in front of me, then settled in the chair across from me. "Okay, Alyssa, what's going on?" Grasping the warm mug in my hands, I let it all spill out. The boy that appeared out of nowhere, claiming to be our lost son. His soulless dark eyes and wide smile. The way he spoke and committed acts of violence without remorse. I told her how everyone in my life remembered him but me. I even told her about the pictures, at the risk of completely outing myself as mentally unstable. Autumn listened intently. She took a deep breath when I finished and sat back in her chair. "That's quite a story," she said. "I know I must sound crazy," I sputtered, "but I don't think the boy is human. He's some kind of demon or something. I know you have books here. Is there anything in them that might help me?" Autumn's eyes met mine. "Yes, I'm sure of it. But I don't need a book to tell me what you're dealing with." I sucked in a breath. She believed me. She wasn't looking at me like I was nuts. In fact, she looked scared for me. "What is it?" I asked. "I'll be right back," she said, setting her mug down. She walked out into the main store and returned a moment later with a heavy book, bound in black leather. She set it down on the table in front of me and flipped through the pages, stopping on a page that was titled, "Black-Eyed Children." A shudder ripped through me. Black-Eyed Children. Everything, well, almost everything fits. The boy asking your permission to come in, his dark eyes, his lack of human feelings. What are they? "Demons, of a sort," Autumn said. "They're from modern folklore, like an urban legend, but there's always some truth to urban legends. These demons appear on a person's doorstep and ask to come in. Once they gain access, both to your home and your mind, they wreak havoc." I sucked in a breath. "Your mind?" I asked. Autumn nodded. "They do have the ability to exert influence over a person's mind. Generally, the weak or vulnerable fall prey to their influence," she said. "How do I get rid of it?" "It's very hard to get rid of black-eyed children once you invite them in," Autumn said grimly. "They insert themselves fully into your life, even if deep down you know they don't belong there. The stronger urge to let them stay pushes that feeling down, burying it," she said. "Why isn't it affecting me?" I asked. "That's the curious thing," Autumn said, frowning. I think he doesn't need you necessarily." "Because of Dylan," I said. "He needed permission from both of you to enter the home, but once he got in, he only needs one of you to allow him to stay," Autumn said. "I do think he's affecting you to some degree, though," Autumn said. "I'd wager a guess that those pictures you saw on your bookshelf weren't actually there. The bedroom, still just a guest room. And the phone call with your mother? Imagined. Just like an illusion. You're stronger than Dylan, but it's only going to be a matter of time before you start questioning yourself and forget why you were concerned about the boy in the first place. The only hope you have is to get Dylan to realize what's going on too, and for both of you to revoke your invitation. I nodded. Okay. It's not going to be easy with him fully under the child's influence, Autumn warned, and it will surely be dangerous for you. You might be better off leaving, she said. My eyes widened. Leave Dylan behind? How could I do that? If you value your life, I'd consider it, Autumn said. But if you're not willing to do that, I have some things that might help. I stood and followed her into the main store. In the back corner, there were glass jars filled with herbs and other items I didn't recognize. What's all this? Herbs for potion making, Autumn said. I'm going to make a potion of protection. That's for you. And a potion for clarity. That's for your husband. She grabbed a Ziploc bag and began dumping carefully measured spoonfuls of herbs into it, then labeling it P for protection. Autumn filled a second baggie and labeled it C for clarity. She handed them to me. You're to make a tea out of those. A tablespoon seeped in a mug of hot water should do it, Autumn said. For your husband, you might want to do two. Next, she moved to a table and rummaged around a box of crystals. She emerged with a rough black stone, shiny in places, dull in others. What's that? I asked. One of the most powerful crystals for protection, Autumn answered. Keep it on you at all times. I slipped the crystal into my pocket. Thanks. Good luck, Alyssa, she said, walking me to the door. And Alyssa, if all else fails, get yourself out. My mind drifted to the bags of herbs in my purse as I drove home. When I got there, Dylan was in a mood. He didn't even glance at me when I walked in. Where's the boy? I asked. What the heck, Alyssa? The boy? He has a name, you know, he said, and he's our son. He's in his room. He's all tired out from a game of soccer we played in the backyard. Soccer? I asked. We don't even own a soccer ball. We do so, Dylan snapped. We kicked it around just this morning. It's sitting right there next to the front door. You're really something else. I turned toward the door, my hand slipping into my pocket and running over the rough edges of the protection stone. The only thing beside the door was a pile of shoes. I didn't think they played soccer at all. I thought the boy made Dylan think they played soccer. Another way of manipulating him into thinking he was just a normal kid. Things were escalating. I needed to get Dylan to drink the tea Autumn gave me. Maybe then I could convince him of what was going on. Hey, I'm gonna make myself some tea. Do you want some? No, I don't want any tea, Dylan snapped. My cheeks burned. If he wasn't going to have any, I was at least going to make some for myself. I'd have to try harder to get this into him, but it was probably not the best time for that. He was grumpy and angry at me, and was taking everything I said as a personal attack. While the water boiled in the kettle, I pulled a mug from the cupboard and the baggie marked P from my purse. I turned to fill up my tea ball with it and found the boy standing directly behind me. What's that? He asked. Tea, I said, pushing past him. You're lying, he said. I'm not lying, it's tea, I said. I measured a spoonful of herbs into my tea ball and dropped it into my mug. The boy watched me the entire time. His gaze made my skin crawl. When the kettle started to shriek, I poured the steaming water into the mug and set it aside to steep. Dad, the boy cried suddenly. Dylan rushed into the kitchen. What? What is it? One side of the boy's mouth quivered. Mom said she's trying to poison you. Don't drink anything she gives you, he said. With that, he turned and went back into his room, slamming the door behind him. On Monday, I woke with a start. Dylan wasn't in bed with me. I knew it the second I opened my eyes. His absence was tangible. I could feel it in the pit of my stomach. I'd turned in early the night before so I could get away from the accusatory stares of my husband, who now believed I was trying to poison him. I didn't notice that he'd ever come to bed. I was too exhausted from lack of sleep. Fear rippled through me. I pulled myself out of bed, slipped out of my pajamas, and changed into a light sweater and a pair of joggers. My eyes drifted to a duffel bag I'd hastily packed before turning in the night before. It held some clothes, my passport, some money, and my work computer. I'd emailed my boss the night before, too, to tell her I wasn't going to be in that day. If I couldn't get Dylan to drink the tea, get him to see that this boy in our house was evil, I was going to leave. My heart ached at the very thought of abandoning him there with that thing. But what else could I do? There was no sense in both of us succumbing to whatever terrors the demon child had in store for us. I'd call for help from the road, try to get someone to do a welfare check. Not that I expected them to find anything wrong, since the boy was capable of manipulating people's minds. But at least I'd know I tried. I'd mourned our life together as I shoved my things in the bag. Memories of our life together. Our whirlwind romance in college. Our marriage shortly after. Vacations and holidays. Laughing until our stomachs hurt. That was all that would be left. Dylan was my person, but I didn't think I could help him. I didn't think anyone could, which was exactly what the boy was hoping for. I pulled open the bedroom door and wandered down the hallway listening. The guest bedroom door was closed. The house was silent. Dylan should have been getting ready for work. I found him sitting on the couch in his pajamas. His back was rod straight, and he was just staring straight ahead at the blank TV. Dark bags punctuated the skin under his eyes. "Dylan," I said, stopping in front of him. "What are you doing?" He startled, then looked up at me slowly. "Getting ready for work, of course," he said. But you're not. You're just sitting on the couch," I said, noticing how pale he was. "Why didn't you come to bed last night?" I asked. Dylan scowled. "What are you talking about, Liz?" "I came to bed. I got up a little while ago to get ready for work. I'm really starting to think we need to have you see someone. You're just not acting like yourself," he said. I chose to ignore the comment. Something was very wrong. Dylan looked like he'd been sitting up all night, just staring at nothing. And he definitely wasn't getting ready for work, not still wearing his pajamas with his hair unbrushed. The boy was obviously planting these things in his head, making him think he was doing them. He looked pale and fragile, sick. And thinking about it, I couldn't actually remember the last time he'd eaten. He'd ushered me out of the kitchen the night before when I tried to make dinner, afraid I was going to poison him. The boy was sucking the life out of him. I rushed back into the bedroom and grabbed my duffel off the floor. I wanted to get it into the car before the boy woke up. Dylan didn't even glance at me as I passed. I dropped the bag in the back of my car, then came back in the house, slipping my car keys into my pocket where they thunked against the crystal Autumn had given me. I had to give it one more try. I wasn't ready to give up yet. "Dylan," I asked, standing in front of him again, "can I make you some breakfast?" "I already ate," he answered. "Oh, what'd you have?" I asked. "Eggs, toast, bacon," Dylan said. "We didn't even have bacon." I was trying to cut back on fatty meats because Dylan had high cholesterol. We hadn't had bacon in the house in months. Besides, there were no dirty dishes in the sink, and nothing looked out of place. Another mind trick from the evil little monster. "Are you sure, Dylan?" I asked, frowning. "I think you might have forgotten." "What, do you think I'm stupid?" he snarled. "You're just trying to slip poison into my food, just like Logan said. Go away. Leave me alone." "Dylan," I said, flinching. "I love you. It's me, Alyssa. You know I wouldn't hurt you. Please let me make you something," I said. "He isn't hungry," the voice came from behind me. I spun around to find the boy, wide grin plastered on his face. His fingers were laced in front of him, his big, dark eyes boring into me. "What are you doing to him?" I asked, shoving a finger in his face. "I don't know what you mean," he said. "He's been sitting here on the couch all night. He thinks he's getting ready for work right now. He hasn't eaten. Why are you doing this?" "I'm just a boy," he said innocently. "How could I possibly be doing any of that?" "I know what you are," I said, narrowing my eyes. "And I don't want you here. I revoke my invitation to come into my home. You're not welcome here." The boy recoiled like he'd been struck. But then, the smile returned to his face. "I don't need your permission anymore," I'm not going to let you have my husband, I hissed. Go find someone else to mess with. Dad, the boy cried suddenly. Mom is scaring me. There's something wrong with her. Help. Dylan jumped up from the couch, his eyes flashing with anger. What are you doing, Liz? He's just a little boy, our little boy. Why can't you just be happy he's returned to us? Why are you trying to ruin our family? We could be so happy. Dylan, I sobbed. This boy isn't ours. He's not even human. Please wake up and see the truth. He's killing you. This is ridiculous, Dylan said, rage making the veins in his forehead stand out. It's jealousy, isn't it? You're just jealous that you no longer have all my attention. It's pathetic, Liz. I shook my head. No, that's not it, I swear. This thing is making you see things, messing with your head, I said. The only person with a messed up head is you, he said. I threw my head back, defeat prickling across every inch of my skin. It was no use. Without the clarity tea, he was never going to break free from the boy's hold on him. There was nothing more I could do. It was time to go. I'm leaving, I said, my voice trembling. I'm going to send help, though. Leaving? Dylan asked, blinking. What do you mean? I can't stay here with him, Dylan, I said. I've got to get out of here. Emotions flickered across his face. Confusion, fear, disbelief. He reached a hand out, and for a second, it felt like the old Dylan was back. He then grabbed my arm roughly and pulled. I let out a sharp scream and tried to tug it away from him. Dylan, what are you doing? The basement, the boy said gleefully. Put her in the basement. Good idea, son, Dylan said. She can't hurt us down there. Let go, I screamed. But he was already dragging me across the floor, both hands clamped around my wrists. Please, just let me go. I'm not trying to hurt anyone. Just let me go. The boy wrenched open the basement door and Dylan shoved me roughly onto the landing at the top of the stairs. I whirled around just as the door slammed shut. I heard the key slide into the lock, the bolt moving into place. I banged on the door and screamed until my throat was raw. On the other side of the door, the boy laughed, that rasping, gurgling sound that made the hair on my neck stand on end. Dylan, let me out of here, I screamed. Let me out, and I'll go away. I won't tell anyone anything. I'll just go. Please. A hiss came through the door. Why would I let you go, Alyssa? Once I'm done with your husband, I'll need someone else to feed on. I dropped my hands to my sides and stepped back from the door. This was it. I was going to die. Dylan was going to die. There was nothing I could do to save us. I sank down on the top step and dropped my head into my hands, sobs shuddering through me. Once I was spent, and no more tears would fall, I stared blankly into the dark. I couldn't give up. That wasn't who I was. I stood and flipped on the light switch beside the door, illuminating the bare bulbs down in the basement. The wide open room held our washer and dryer, water heater and furnace, and a bunch of old furniture and odds and ends. There were windows at the top of the walls, but they were made of glass block, all but one. I rushed down the stairs and across the room to the washer and dryer. Staring up at the window, we'd never converted to glass block because sometimes in the summer, Dylan would run an extension cord through it to plug in his electric meat smoker. I climbed up on the dryer and tugged at the crank. It was tight, maybe a little rusty, but after a minute, I got it to turn. The window, which opened toward the backyard, slowly lowered. It wasn't a big window, but I thought I could fit through it. Come on, come on, I whispered, turning the crank. But it wouldn't move anymore. I squinted through the frosted glass. Something was below the window, stopping it from opening any further. What was it? Crouched on the dryer, I froze, thinking. I could break the glass and push whatever it was aside, but Dylan and that demon spawn might hear it and come running. I could scream for help, but that might result in the same thing. Fresh, hot tears sprang to my eyes. What was I going to do? I was in the throes of despair, ready to give up again, when a high-pitched whining sound carried through the partially opened window. I whipped my head around in a flash of golden fur, then a dark nose pushed itself into the crack. Gus, I whispered. My baby boy, I'm so happy to see you. Gus whined again and tried to shove his face further into the basement. "It's stuck," I groaned. "I'm trying to get out, but it's stuck." A moment later, Gus stuck his nose back into the window and gave a little shuff. I wrapped my hand around the crank and turned. The window began to lower again. "Oh, Gus, you beautiful boy." When the window was fully open, I saw what had been blocking it. A pile of bleach white bones, picked completely clean, in the small skull of a cat, which I'm assuming had been lodged in the dirt just below the hinge of the window. I shuddered, but I didn't spend any time thinking about it. I folded my shoulders inward and stuck my head through the window. Gus tap danced in the grass, watching me, his eyes serious like he was telling me to hurry up. "I'm trying, boy," I panted. It was a tight squeeze, but I managed to get out. I fell onto my back with a thump, then scrambled to my feet. I looked around, afraid Dylan and the boy heard the commotion and were coming after me. When they didn't show, I motioned to Gus and bolted around the side of the house to the driveway. As I climbed into my car behind Gus and turned the key in the ignition, I saw a pale face and dark eyes watching me from the window. I'm writing this last installment from the road, Gus sleeping happily beside me in the front seat. We've been traveling for days, trying to put as much distance between ourselves and that evil child as we can. Once I feel like we're safely far enough away, Gus and I will start over. A lesson for all of you out there. If a child with dark eyes ever asks permission to enter your home, do not give it. I don't know what will happen to Dylan, but I can't worry about that anymore. I'll always have the memories. This story creeps me out, and I gotta know, what are your thoughts on how it all transpired? I'm just glad she got out of there with her dog. Run, girl. Make sure you're following along wherever you get this podcast, and share Avery After Dark with your friends, family, coworkers, anyone in your life that loves a little spookiness. Until next episode, I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark.